It was far too much for me to be able to deal with. And thankfully, someone that genuinely cared about me did something about it.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks, where we talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios in Conway, Arkansas, broadcasting in 170 languages to 127 countries to a listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, I have a guest with me, a very special guest, I will say, not to inflate his already inflated ego, but Timothy Walker. I had the privilege to pastor him for several years. And with June being Men's Mental Health Month, I just begin to reflect on your story and the things that, you have gone through in your life. So I thought that you would be a great person to have in this first episode speaking to men's mental health. So it's great to have you here with us today.
Well, I appreciate it. And you were right on both counts, pestering and pastor.
Yeah, I do my best. I heard a preacher say one time, I've not pastored a lot of churches, but I've pestered a lot of churches.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about, we won't go way, way back to, you know, the day I was born, but tell us a little bit about the adult time in your life where you started to realize that you were slipping into a depressive state that ultimately led to what we're going to get to and talk about in the show.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to go a little further back than that,
okay,
but I'm going to have to stay in the present as well.
Okay.
So it's kind of a Star Trek-ian thing.
Sure.
Ancestry.com came out. I found out from that that I had 14 brothers and sisters scattered around 5 states. I also found out that my mother was a raging alcoholic. And I have a sister that I'm close with now. Both of us were born with SIDS,
sudden infant death syndrome.
That's SIDS.
The one. Mm-hmm.
Not SIDS then. Fetal alcohol.
Fetal alcohol syndrome. Yeah. So if you had SIDS, you'd probably not be alive.
Not be here. Yes, yeah. That was an unfortunate slip of the tongue. So I have struggled my entire life since my earliest knowledge that I was different. I responded different to stimuli that everyone else seemed to respond to in a quote-unquote normal way. As a result, didn't fit in, didn't feel like I belonged, outcast, got bullied a lot. I was a little fat kid because food was safety.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, and this is the result of that, all the way up through, I would have to say, through high school. It was always, don't fit in, you're odd, there's something wrong, self-destructive behavior. My parents had no idea what to do with me, my adoptive parents. I mean, I was raised well. They took very good care of me, probably better care of me than they should have. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in kind of a insulated world, upper middle class. Never saw a black person until I was in fifth grade, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then we fast forward again to adulthood, and we're dealing with a lot of what are now adult-sized issues that I am not prepared to deal with. I was arrested for DWI and burglary when I was 21. Got a girl pregnant when I was 21. Did the right thing, married her. That lasted a year and a half. There was all sorts of dalliances on her side. Anyway, so it was just a general wreck of a life, and the vast majority of it I did to myself. And I now understand where that came from. It's not an excuse, but it did provide a great deal of explanation for things I had no explanation for. Sure. Then, in 2000, we got transferred to Indianapolis, Indiana from the lovely state of Arkansas and lived up there for 17 years. Then I found out on my birthday that my mother had Alzheimer's dementia and I needed to come back or they were going to have to put her in a home. So I moved back to the state that I never had any intention of ever coming back to. By the way, God doesn't care what your intentions are.
That's true.
He's going to do what he's going to do, and you just better deal with it or not. And not is a lot more painful.
Right.
So I moved back here in July, and October, my wife and son Miles had by themselves moved the entire entire household down here and moved in on top of my mom. And once she realized we were all here, first part of November, she passed away. She was quite literally holding down the fort until somebody came to take care of the house. It was way too much. And I had no way of dealing with it. Now, this is, I had already gone to, surrendered to the ministry. Well, rededicated my life to the Lord, surrendered to the ministry, started going to Bible college, got that, got one, two master's degrees, had pastored three churches, and fell apart. I was not equipped nor prepared to handle all that. As you understand, as a pastor, it's much easier to deal with other people's problems than your own. And there's not that many people that, as pastors, we can go to with utter confidentiality, and especially in mainstream medicine, because they do not account for the spiritual aspect of a Christian. This really nosy guy that I know, asked me a question, and he, don't nod your head. You know who I'm talking about.
I do know who you're talking about. Yeah. But this is your story, not mine.
Okay. He asked me if I felt like I was a danger to myself or others. And I just kind of blew it off and I said, well, yeah. And you have to understand that was my general state all the time.
Sure.
But you were this nosy person was the first one to ask ever. And I'd seen a few psychologist or psychiatrist until my parents asked me, well, oh, that was because of the burglary thing. I had to go to a psychiatrist and we went long enough to fulfill the court order. And because, you know, only crazy people need to go to psychiatrists. So anyway, so you had me go in under a personal commitment, I think is what it's called, right, or something like that.
A voluntary commitment.
Voluntary commitment. There's the word. And I went in on the weekend, which meant instead of the 3 days, I ended up being there five.
Right. That wasn't planned or anything, by the way.
No, yeah. No, not at all. I found out for the first time what it was to see sort of a normal world, because they put me on Lamictal. Mm-hmm. I'd never been on medicine of any sort for mental anything. And this is all just since I've been back to Arkansas. I was diagnosed bipolar 2. And ADHD, probably a little autism in there somewhere. I haven't, we haven't tested for that. But it was far too much for me to be able to deal with. And thankfully, someone that genuinely cared about me did something about it. Now, there was a lot of blowback. You know this as well as I do. But it got me to a place where not only could I seek help, but I kind of knew what normalcy felt like. So I knew where I needed to, what I needed to reach for.
Right. So there's a couple of things that I want to note in everything that you just said. And that is that while you were a Christian, while you were walking with Christ, it became so overwhelming that there was suicidal ideologies. There are some that believe, and I would be as bold to say they falsely believe, that a Christian cannot get to that point. Could you speak to that for just a moment?
There is a show called The 700 Club, and there was a young Irish woman that was on that show. And she was one of the earliest members, one of the most beloved members of the show there, the franchise. And she admitted that she had depression and had been taking medicine for depression. And they fired her because no Christian should ever be depressed. Well, that's a lie straight from hell.
Well, we see it in the Bible.
Can I say hell? Are we? We're on a Christian thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just don't go any farther than hell. but you know, to that point, you know, there comes a time where the spiritual nature of man and the flesh nature of man intersect, and we have to treat, as a pastor, we have to treat the body, the mind, and the soul. And so when it gets to a point of, hey, you know, I don't want to be here anymore, or you ask the question, do you feel like you're a danger to yourself or others? We're not saying, do you want to kill yourself? Because people know what the answer to that, what the consequences of that answer is. And so when you say, are you a danger to yourself or others, it opens the door for that conversation. And there are those that believe that a Christian should never be able to get to that point. And I would say the only reason that some Christians don't get to that point is because of the grace of God, that he keeps them from that storm. But we see in the Bible, you know, Jonah, after he spoke to the Ninevites, he wanted to die. Was it Elisha that he got under the tree and said, Lord, just kill me? And the Lord said, go get some food and take a nap. Yeah. You know, we see it all through the Bible.
Sure.
So how do we reconcile that spiritually?
You know, honestly, it's very simple. And it's unfortunate that we have not yet reached this point across Christendom. We have been broken, as has all creation, since the flood.
Yeah.
I mean, since the garden. Mm-hmm. We were reduced in number to 8. At the flood. They were so bad by the time we got to the Tower of Babel, he had to split the languages, and they're still all related to each other. People have been killing each other, been killing themselves, been lying and stealing and cheating ever since the fall. Nothing has changed. And the only thing that changes with a believer is we have an enlivened spirit. We have a spirit that is once again connected to God as it was intended. But we still have a horribly broken body, and that soul, that mental aspect that makes me, Timothy, and makes you whoever you are, Brian.
Depends on what day it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But whatever that is, that part is still broken. It's still twisted because of sin. So that can lead us to depression and suicide and alcohol and drugs and all of this. I think I told you I was saved when I was 9, knew I was supposed to do what the guy behind the big box was doing by the time I was 11. Well, by the time I was 13, I was smoking weed. By the time I was 14, I was smoking cigarettes. But I did it backwards. By the time I was 17, I was drinking. And by the time I was legally drinking, I was doing a whole lot of different kind of drugs. Had nothing to do with my salvation. Had I died at any point in there, I would have still gone to heaven because my sins are paid for.
Right.
But because of the broken nature of this world, the broken nature of us, we will sin.
Yeah.
Paul deals with that. The stuff I shouldn't do, I do. So to tell someone that's a believer, oh, you can't be sad, you can't be depressed, you're a believer, that should take care of everything, they're lying. They're either lying or they're selling something. Because believers will be sad. They'll be happy.
Yeah.
They'll be depressed. They'll be clinically depressed, and sad is not the same thing as depression.
That's true.
They'll have all the ailments that we see in the unbelieving world because we live in a broken and unbelieving world.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you talked about Lamictal, and I call it the sunshine pill. Even though, you know, I don't prescribe medicine, I have, for the sake of liability, I have no opinion towards any type of medicine. But I have seen firsthand how medicine in chronic cases is almost the only, I don't want to use the word cure, but benefit. You know, the American Psychiatric Association or the American Psychology Association says the best use of drugs is in conjunction with therapy, and should be used as an adjunct to get you through therapy. The problem, and I heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I heard you say was that during the commitment was the first time that you ever began to see what normal was supposed to look like. The problem that we have sometimes is we don't know what your normal is, because if you have lived throughout your whole life under the oppression of sinful nature, of not your necessarily your sinful nature, but the sinful nature of man and humanity, we don't know what that baseline is, I guess maybe a better word. And so we get to the point of where, okay, we're dealing with the suppression, but you're still acting this way, this way, this way, and this way. And these things may not be sin. It may just be not what people see as normal, you know, but it could just simply be that you are wired to be more interested into things that aren't normal. And I, that's the best way that I know to say it isn't your average, I guess you should say, because there are outliers.
Fringe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when we get to that point, it's very difficult as a clinician to say, okay, how do we do this? And, you know, you mentioned by, I think you said 12, 13, you were smoking weed. In the 80s and 90s, there was this big push that weed was the gateway drug. And that's false. Trauma is the gateway drug.
Yes.
And so what we see here is this culmination of trauma that has now resulted and snowballed into a commitment. And I'll say a hospitalization, because I don't want to get confused on the terms
right there.
So now as a Christian being hospitalized in a mental health ward, I would say psych ward, that's what it is, but
that's okay. Well,
I want to be sensitive to our listeners.
Oh.
That because there's nothing wrong with being in a psych ward. There's nothing wrong. There's no shame in that. But now as a Christian being in this ward, this room, how does that feel when now you're beginning to see what some normalcy is even supposed to look like?
It felt like hyperactivity. The ability to focus changed. I've always been a pretty engaging, outgoing sort of individual, but dead honest, I'm an introvert.
Well, and during that period of time too, I noticed that you withdrew a lot, which was not normal, which to me gave the inclination that I needed to ask that question. You know, there has been this period of time now where you weren't engaging at all. You weren't attending church. You weren't sending the memes and the videos and all that kind of stuff that you send 5 million times a day.
Incessantly, yes.
And so now being in the hospital, seeing what normal is supposed to look like or what we perceive normal to be, sometimes people get very scared on what life is going to look like now when they have lived in this depressive state for so long. And sometimes what that causes them to do is to not take the medicine because they feel more normal in the depressive state. And so what happened there once you found this newfound, for lack of a better word, superpower?
Well, the first thing that happened was I started doing magic again, which may sound weird, but I've been a professional magician for over 35 years. And obviously they wouldn't let me have magic props, so I was borrowing quarters from the staff and chewing magic paddles out of ice cream sticks because I couldn't get anything to cut them with. Things, weird stuff like that, but I had not had that drive in a very long time, and especially since moving back to Arkansas. That was the first thing. The second thing that happened was I looked around and realized I wasn't alone. I wasn't the, and you know, you know that's the case, but seeing it lived out, even if it is in a hospital situation, it gives you a different perspective. And I'm not going to say, ooh, I'm not near as messed up as these people, because everyone was messed up in their own special way. But what I did notice was you could tell believers from unbelievers.
Yeah.
And I want to say it becomes a little bit different than just a normal depression, and more of this great sadness that cannot be conquered by any means that we have available to us. And then along comes the sunshine pill, and it, all of a sudden, I'm the normal one in a room full of really, really depressed people. And all of a sudden, the first thing that came back besides the magic was the need to help, which, as you know, is one of the pastoral gifts. We always got to help everybody, even to our own detriment sometimes. But it was, I found myself helping because I knew this, having, you know, noethetic counseling training and so forth. And I kept telling the facilitator, if I talk too much, you let me know. If I try and usurp, you let me know. And she just let me go. So, and I didn't lose my salvation at any point, even when I took that medicine from the devil.
Yeah. Well, that made me forget what I was about to say. You know, in helping, that's what it was. In helping, it's not just a pastoral gift, but it is also a prescription to help with depression. You know, anytime we find ourselves in a low mood or a depressive state or excessive sadness, going out and helping somebody gives us purpose. And when we have that purpose, then that makes that depression to be less.
Something other to focus on than ourselves.
Yeah. But what it also does is it gets you off the couch or out of the bed and into the sunlight, getting vitamin D, you know. And I think, you know, depression is almost cliche nowadays that we use this term depression.
Oh, everyone's depressed.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what it is that we have, this is a whole other episode, but you know how preachers, they'll just insert something somewhere and then we'll talk about this later.
Rabbits.
Yeah. But I think probably the major detriment to society within depression and anxiety is the need to be behind a screen or, you know, to be in a room playing a game or being on their phone, because they lack the interpersonal skills to actually help somebody. You know, my niece, she's 18 years old. She won't go into Walmart by herself because she doesn't know how to interact with people. And we have much more than that. And so we're not doing our kids any favors by doing everything for them. And we're not doing ourselves any favors by refusing to do things for ourselves. So in that time, there comes this thought of self-care, which to our partners, our children, can seem very selfish, but it has to be done. And so as you then reintegrate into the home, how did you deal with, you said there was a lot of, I don't remember the term you used,
blowback.
But there was a lot of blowback. How did you navigate through that?
Well, with Miles, he was special needs and a sweet kid, and he offered hugs and kisses, which was his way. Carol did not understand. Carol, because of her upbringing, is very much a suck it up and keep moving forward type of person. So the idea of stopping and going into a hospital for something other than a gaping wound or something like that really did not, she really did not comprehend that, and it resulted in anger. Mm-hmm. Frustration, which resulted in more anger, and we're still married, by the way.
Yeah. A lot of that anger, though, was towards me.
It
and I'm okay with that.
I think it differentiated towards you. Mm-hmm. yeah, she had a very special name for you for a while.
That's okay. I've been called worse things by better people. You've heard that before.
Just no one better.
But
there was, and it was just, I think, a disconnect. Her mother had told her one time, her mother has issues, so it's generational. I'm not crazy. I've read all the books. If I was crazy, I would know it. So it's the other side of that. Only crazy people go to see a doctor, and you're not crazy.
Yeah.
It was, and it doesn't come up any longer, but it did for probably a couple of years. Not like a weapon, but just as kind of a reference, well, you did this, and this happened, and I can't do that because I have to work, and so forth. I've been disabled for a long time. Anyway, it was there. It was definitely not a happy time for her.
Yeah, so kind of wrapping this up in a real pretty bow as best we can. What would your message be to the men that may be listening to this podcast that are dealing with mental health issues, that maybe were brought up in the you pull yourself up by the bootstraps or I have to work so I can't take care of my mental health? What in any of those type of scenarios, what would your advice be to them?
To a Christian man, your job is as head of your household in a spiritual nature. If you do not take care of yourself, you cannot take care of your family. in that respect, you have to come first, because you will not, if you can't self-care, you cannot care for others. It just doesn't work right.
Yeah.
To unbelieving folks that may be listening, and to believing folks, seek help. It's not a problem. That whole bootstrap mentality is, again, of the devil. It is not in Scripture. I don't care what translation you read, it's not there.
Right.
We have a Savior that helps us on the spiritual realm and helps us in the physical and emotional realm, but sometimes, just because of where we are and who we are, we need to seek help. That's why it's there. If we wasn't going to need it, God wouldn't have allowed it to be established.
And if it's helpful and good, we know that it comes from Him, because all good and perfect gifts come from above.
No matter how much it may hurt sometimes.
That's true. That's true. Well, thank you for being with us here today. We appreciate your vulnerability. There's not a lot of men that would sit in that chair and tell what you've told. So we really appreciate you for sharing with us today. All right. I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. Again, we're in LifeWord Studios. You can find all of our Christian content at lifeword.org. Thank you so much for being here with us today, and we hope to see you soon. Goodbye.